She heard firing from somewhere behind them, and the doors at the far end of the long room blew out. The Adiran heard the noise too, just before they crashed through the exit from the dormitory, his head turned to glance back in the direction the noise had come from. Then they were in the short corridor and out onto the terrace, which ran round the deep cavern of the repair and maintenance area. On one side of the huge cavern, a fallen, tangled heap of smashed carriages and wrecked machinery blazed. The train Wubslin had started moving had been rammed into the rear of the train already in the long scooped-out alcove which hung over the cavern floor. Parts of both the front trains had scattered like toys down to the cavern floor, piled against the walls, crushed into the roof. The foam fell through the cavern, sizzling on the hot debris of the wreck where flames spilled up from crumpled carriages and sparks flashed. Zogzal slipped on the terrace, and for one second Balveda thought they would both skid off its surface, over the guardrails and down to the jumble of machinery and equipment on the cold, hard floor below. But the Adiran steadied himself, turned and pounded along the broad walkway toward the metal catwalk, which crossed the breadth of the cavern and led over the far edge of the terrace into another tunnel, the tunnel which led to the transit tubes. She heard the Adiran breathe. Her ringing ears caught the crackle of flames, the hiss of foam and the laboured wheeze of Zoxal's breath. He held her easily, as though she weighed nothing. She cried out in frustration, heaved her body with all her strength, trying to break his grip or even just get an arm free, struggling weakly. They came to the suspended catwalk, and again the Adiran almost slipped, then again caught himself in time and steadied. He started along the narrow gantry, his limping, unsteady tread shaking it, making it sound like a metal drum. Her back hurt as she strained. Zoxal's grip stayed firm. Then he skidded to a halt, brought her round in front of his huge saddle face. He held her by both shoulders for a moment, then took her right arm by the elbow with one hand, keeping hold of her right shoulder with the other fist. He brought one knee out, holding his thigh level with the cavern floor, 30 meters below. Held by elbow and shoulder, her weight taken by that one arm, her back aching, her head hardly clear, she suddenly realized what he was going to do. She screamed. Zoxal brought the woman's upper arm down across his thigh, snapping it like a twig. Her cry broke like ice. He took her by the wrist of her good arm and swung her out over the side of the catwalk, sweeping her down beneath him and positioning her hand on a thin metal stanchion. Then he left her. It was done in a second or two. She swung like a pendulum under the metal bridge. Zoxal ran off, limping. Each step, shaking the suspended gantry, vibrated through the stanchion to Balveda's hand, loosening her grip. She hung there. Her broken arm dangled uselessly at her side. Her hand gripped the cold, smooth, foam-smeared surface of the thin stanchion. Her head spun. Waves of pain she tried to but could not shut off crashed through her. The cavern lights blinked out, then came back on again. Another explosion shook the wrecked carriages. Zoxal crossed the catwalk and ran hobbling over the terrace on the other side of the great cave into the tunnel. Her hand started to slip, going numb. Her whole arm was going cold. Peristek Balveda twisted in the air, put her head back, and howled. The drone stopped. Now the noises were from behind. It had taken the wrong direction. It was still fuddled. Zoxal hadn't doubled back after all. I'm a fool. I shouldn't be allowed out by myself. It turned its body over in the air of the tunnel, leading away from the control room and the long dormitories, slowed and stopped, then powered back the way it had come. It could hear laser fire. Horza was in the control room. It was clear of water and foam, though smoke was coming from a large hole in one console. He hesitated, then heard another scream, the sound of a human, a woman, and ran through the doors leading to the dormitories. She tried to swing herself, make a pendulum of her body, and so hook a leg onto the gantry, but the already injured muscles in her lower back could not do it. The muscle fibres tore, pain swamped her. She hung. She couldn't feel her hand. Foam settled on her upturned face and stung her eyes. A series of explosions racked the mangled heap of carriages, making the air around her quiver, shaking her. She felt herself slip. She dropped fractionally, her grip moving down the stanchion a millimetre or two. She tried to hold on tighter, but could feel nothing. Noise came from the terrace. She tried to look round, and in a moment she saw Horza racing along the terrace for the catwalk, holding the gun. He skidded on the foam and had to reach out with his free hand to steady himself. "Horza!" she tried to shout, but all that came out was a croak. Horza ran along the catwalk above her, staring ahead. His steps shook her hand. It had started to slip again.
Horza,
she said again as loud as she could. The changer ran on past her, his face set, the rifle raised, his boots hammering the metal deck above her. Balveda looked down, her head dropping. Her eyes closed.